step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 637. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my interminable, indomitable, and infrequent, that's not true, co-host Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Stick with us, folks. We will be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
Welcome to the house.
To the house of Holbein.
It is Wednesday, October 6th, 2021. On the show today, we're going to talk to a new company or a new project called Open Call, which is a kind of a new open mic for show tunes that happens here in Austin. And of course, Nicole and I are going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Sheboygan. Stick with us. So, Nicole, are you there?
The House of Holbein.
The House. H A U S of Holbein.
House. I said House of Holbein.
I know.
It's like a little rock concert.
Yeah, so.
I am kind of intrigued by this.
I'm assuming that, you know, when you hear something in German that you're going to mention.
Rocky Das Musical.
Yeah, it wouldn't be
from
a show.
Hamburg.
Without that, I believe Rocky Das Musical had a regulation-sized boxing ring on stage.
No way. Full-size regulation boxing ring? That's insane.
But no, that is from a show that opened last week called...
Finally opened, called
Six. Six has such an interesting... We've talked about it a lot on the show, so we don't have to go crazy. But it literally was about to open when they shut down New York City and Broadway. And as a matter of fact, they were going to shut it down at 8 p.m. And the producers of Six said, if you're going to shut it down, you have to shut it down at 6. Because at 8 p.m., I'll have a house full of people in the theater. So they had to actually change the time of the shutdown to accommodate for Six, which was planning on opening that night.
So crazy.
And there was I don't know whether it was a news article or a podcast or something I saw on TV, but they followed one of the producers of Six on that day and how he was like,
oh,
he was,
that's interesting.
He was at the office getting all his gifts together because folks have listened to the show, probably know, and certainly we've talked about it, is that opening night on Broadway is like Christmas and everybody gives everybody gifts.
That's a good way to put it. It is like Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, the way I described it is opening night is like Christmas, and if you close as the show I did closes, it's a wake. So it's very dichotomous.
Oh, I like that analogy.
So anyway, Six not only restarted as they did a few weeks ago, but on October 3rd, which was, I think, Sunday, they opened for an open run, and across the board, pretty rave reviews.
Well, I mean, were you surprised by that? And it did get the same type of lovely reviews in the England where it was before.
Correct. And they had a very interesting path to Broadway, and which they did not get to actually do because of COVID-19. But they opened up on the West End and almost immediately scheduled openings throughout the United States that wasn't New York.
Which was crazy.
Well, you know, crazy as a fox, maybe. We don't know. We don't know whether it worked or not because they weren't able to do it. But they were going to open in all these cities. I know Chicago was one. I think probably Los Angeles.
LA was one.
And then go to Broadway. And then, of course, COVID-19 hit, and they continually tried to do things. You remember the trucks in the drive-in movie
theater? Oh, I remember the yes.
Did not work either. They had to close that. So I'm really happy for them. And what I think is great about this, and I know we've talked about this, the two people that wrote this were college students at Cambridge, and they did it in their dorm room.
Well, those are how some great things happen. So it doesn't surprise me, and kind of love it. And listen to the music. It was like they were listening to stuff through the walls and were inspired.
Sure. I totally love it. And it's a pastiche of different types of music. Some people have been criticizing it because it's not, it's not deep enough. But I don't believe that that's what they're trying to do.
I explain it to people. I'm like, I don't know. It's the Spice Girls' sixth wife of Henry VIII. I don't really know how else to explain it, but it's a story about that and a concert and Spice Girly.
It's set up as a competition between the six wives of Henry VIII to see who had it worse.
The overall experience, they're just like, I don't get it. And I'm like, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to go in and have a good time.
Supposed to go have fun. It's kind of like ABBA. I mean, kind of like Mamma Mia, excuse me.
They'll have a good time.
Yep. So
it sounds fun, and I'm not even there, so I could just imagine.
Yep. Jesse Green reviewed it for the great lady, the New York Times, and talked about how it says it. He says it isn't fizzle. Oh my God, I can't say this word. It's philosophically. I could not say philosophically. And it isn't philosophically incoherent jumble. It's a rollicking, reverberant blast from the past. And if you haven't seen any of the videos by now, you just aren't really paying attention to theater. But it just seems like so much fun to me.
I'm on the same page with you and would love to see it.
And it runs a whopping 80 minutes. So that's very short for Broadway, but also very good for today's attention span.
It seems like it's just a whirlwind of fun. Like, you leave like, whoa, they leave you wanting more. I get it.
What? Is that what you said?
Yeah, whoa!
You know what I didn't do? Hold on, but I may wait. Let me just, yeah. So some of the other reviewers, Charles Isherwood, my boyfriend, ex-husband, said, it will, I confidently expect and indeed hope, to be a long-running hit playing to audiences on Broadway and elsewhere for longer than most of that wretched King's marriages lasted. Greg Evans from Deadline said six, and its sextet of singing, dancing queens has lost none of its vitality and charm over the ensuing months of darkness. If anything, the musical seems even more joyous for the time away. And finally, Adam Feldman of Time Out said its 80 minutes are stuffed with clever terms of rhyme and catchy pastiche melodies that let mega-voiced singers toss off impressive riffs to ruffle your ruffs. And let me just tell you something, Nicole. I have not had my ruffs ruffled in a long while.
I was about to say, when was the last time you've had your ruffs ruffled?
Right. Well, I also need to say, we get talking about the first piece of music right away, and I keep forgetting to thank Kim Simpson and another wonderful international folk bazaar. I just love his music and have so much fun listening to it.
Kim makes me happy. Kim's choices make me happy in his musical selections.
Yep. Now, one of the things that you did not get to do last week, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to do it this week, although we cannot spend a lot of time with it, is to talk about the Tonys. Were you able to watch any of it?
Yes. I sent you my notes.
And as you know,
left those for me.
Right. And as you know, because you listened to the show, you heard me talk about all those notes and how we disagreed on most everything you said. Surprise.
Yeah. Well.
I don't know. But did you get to see the actual awards on the streaming service? The
Paramount Plus?
Yeah.
No.
Which was actually the better of the two.
I figured it was by watching everything that I was watching online later with it. But, I couldn't. First of all, I was having family dinner. And second of all, I couldn't finagle between that.
I got you.
And in the East Coast, we didn't get it right away.
I heard this.
There was football and lag. So it wasn't happening for me whether I had tried or not.
Gotcha. Well, so one of the things that we didn't talk about last week, and one of the things that I was curious about was best actor in a musical. Aaron Tveit was the one and only.
It was like Aaron Tveit up against Aaron Tveit.
Well, no, he was up against nothing. They could have not voted him in, and there was all this talk prior to going. All right, I hope if they don't give him the award, they at least tell him ahead of time, because that would be really embarrassing.
That would be really just awkward on a whole nother level.
Yeah, but he did end up winning, and that was good. And I thought also interesting for winning is something we didn't talk about is, oh, and now I just lost her name. Oh my God, I forgot her name. Never mind. Best actress
was
in a
show
play.
Or the performance?
Best actress in a play. It was from The Sound Inside, and her name is, I always get her mixed up with Mary Kay Place, but they have nothing to do with one another. Anyway, her. She won for The Sound Inside. All right. Well, was there anything else that you wanted to mention, Tony-wise?
No, not really. I mean, I sent you.
Yeah, which I read
to
the
covered.
Folks.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Was like, so.
Well, I'm guessing that you got this, but Did He Like It no longer exists, and it is now replaced with a website called Did They Like It? Now, did you read anything about that?
No, and you know what's funny is I saw this on here, and I was like, well, I have know nothing about this, and I knew that the Did He Like It site was kind of dead, but they don't have anything to tell you to go to the other one, and I couldn't find articles. I do like the new setup on the Did They Like It.
Right, and I like the new setup, and one of the things that they did was, so Did He Like It was based on, oh my God, what's his name? Who used to write for the New York Times? Anyway,
Isherwood?
No, the head writer.
Oh, one that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, oh, boy,
a little caricature of him.
You are worse than me, or as bad as me. So anyway, it was based on him, and then they would bring in other critics. But this is a group of people, and three of which were curated so that lesser voices are heard. So, critics of a color, I believe, and I don't have the names of them. I only have the names of one of them, and I can't.
Ben
really...
Brantley. His name came to me.
Thank
Brantley.
You.
Brantley. Ben Brantley.
Ben Brantley. Oh. But okay, got it. So the new critics are Anna Zambrana, Bidatri De Churi, Christian Lewis, Juan Michael Porter II, and Ran Ji. This is very different from a middle-aged white guy. So
they're very young.
Yeah,
or they look very young.
They are indeed. I like it. So you can get information about that at didtheylikeit.com. They have liked Six, Passover, Girl from the North Country, West Side Story, A Soldier's Play, and My Name is Lucy Barton. I believe we're going back to Did He Like It? It literally just got Did They Like It was just announced. And I believe this was the first one, was Six. But it also says they like Passover, which is open as well.
Yeah, and they actually have, when they like these, you know, you'll see the ones that you just named on the side, but they go back even further to, like, they had Lion King and Tina Turner and Kill
the
Mockingbird.
Yeah, it's got all the old stuff in there as well.
It's got, older before, so you can really spend some time, but it's so much easier to navigate in here.
It really is, I have to say. I think they did a good job.
I do too. Hats off to Did They Like It.
Hats off to Did They Like It. I like Did They Like It.
I like it. I'll give my arm out with the cool little, they have different sleeves on the arms. I'll give you my, I think it's yellow. So I'll give you the yellow sleeve.
There you go.
I think it's the yellow is the thumbs up. We're just going to pretend it is.
Yep. So nothing really to talk about at this point, but before the pandemic, one of the shows that was set to go into previews was Carolina Change. Everybody was really looking forward to that. And it is beginning now, previews this week, I believe on Friday, but I could be wrong.
Oh, I think I read the same. I think I believe I read Friday also, but who wouldn't be excited about Carolina Change starting previews? It's such a wonderful show.
I've never seen it, and it is something that I've wanted to do as well. But so I'm looking forward. Have you seen it?
I have. I saw the original cast and the music, and it's great. And I saw it when Zach did it years ago. I got to be 10 years now.
Oh, I didn't know they did
maybe
it
longer. It's just the music in it. Oh,
and the music is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it's the story of a upper middle class Jewish family and their relationship with their black people that work for them. No other way to say it, but that. Really, really looking forward to it. So yesterday, I sat down with my Netflix account and watched as much as I could Diana the Musical.
Oh my gosh, my brother came in and had a lot to say about that this morning.
Did he watch it?
He was reading all the press and everything in England, and he's like, what is this Diana the Musical? And started going into what he was reading, and I was just laughing.
Well, I think your brother should listen to this show more often because we've talked about it quite often. So Diana the Musical...
I told him.
So Diana the Musical was in previews at the Longacre Theater in March of 2020 when it got shut down. And they did something that no other theater company did. They decided to go ahead and shoot the show for video while during the height of the pandemic.
Still crazy. Still think that's crazy and genius, but crazy. I don't know. It's interesting to me.
Little crazy. It was shot very well, but I have to tell you, boy, they should save their money on this musical.
Yeah, and so I'm very perplexed because remember how we were reading all these wonderful, great reviews and we were like, oh, okay. But then, like, not so much anymore. So I'm very confused. I'm very confused why Diana is a musical, but I'm very confused.
Well, and it's not, it is pablum at its best. And there's really not much to it. I think it was staged well, but the show is, and it was directed by the same guy that directed Come From Away, along with along with the choreographer Kelly Devine also did Come From Away. It's just not
so
very good.
How long did you get into it?
What?
How long did you?
Oh,
get
I watched
into
about. I watched about three. I would have watched the whole thing, but I fell asleep. But I watched about three quarters of it, and all the time I'm going, "Oh my God, this woman that plays Queen Elizabeth is so familiar. I'm not crazy about her, but she's so familiar. It's Judy Kaye."
I was about to say, isn't it Judy Kaye? But yes.
You were about to say the correct thing. It is indeed Judy Kaye.
Man Chickalella loves the Judy Kaye.
I love Judy Kaye. And, she was in Oh Brother with Me, and so she's a lovely person. But, this is just a show that shouldn't be. I'm afraid. It doesn't. There's no new news there, first of all, especially at the onslaught of all the, you have The Crown, and then there's a new Diana piece coming out soon.
Yes, with the Kristen Stewart, and I have to say that actually looks really good. I was like, really? I'm kind of sucked into wanting to see this movie.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, I do have some links, and I have not read these articles, but I just want to share with you these headlines. New York Post.
They're juicy.
New York Post by Johnny Olesinski. Diana the Musical is the legendary flop Broadway deserves.
I mean, I don't know what to say to that. Maybe.
Yep. Vanity Fair's Richard Lawson said maybe a Princess Diana musical wasn't such a great idea.
I mean, ouch.
Ouch. Los Angeles Times' Charles McNulty said why the Netflix musical Diana is theme park schlock and a bad sign for Broadway.
Oh, gosh.
So, and I have to agree. I mean, he says schlock, I say pablum, which is, it's something you don't get to say all that often. So that's why I said it.
I don't know. I mean, Diana's story is fascinating. I just don't ever, musical was not in the way I ever thought being
No,
told,
and not this but... kind. And so here's a beef I have with the production of the film. So the chorus is 10 people by my count. But they must have doubled them in post, doubled and tripled them in post, because they sounded like a chorus of 30. But you're looking at 10 people on stage. And it was very off-putting for me. So I don't think they should have...
staging, so...
What?
That, isn't that more of a filming criticism than
yes,
a staging criticism?
Absolutely. I wasn't... I was. That's why I prefaced it with, let me talk about the film itself. I just don't... You know, I... If you're going to do a video tape of a live stage show, it should have that kind of feel. And the picture should match the voice.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's a little important.
There was some cute thing. And the other thing, and I don't think I said it to someone. So it's set in, you know, from her coronation or from their romance to her death. And so that was like mid to late 80s or early 90s through 99, I think, is when she died, or 98. And all the clothes were of that era. And I'm sorry, my eyeballs hurt. I don't like that fashion. I had trouble with the costumes.
Wasn't really the time period, more that the choices that they made.
Correct. It was the time period that bothered me. I did not like, I don't like late 80s, 90s fashion, and my eyeballs were hurting. No,
it was a lot of feathered hair and shoulder pads.
Yep. High waisted pants and
bows and
big shoulders. Yeah. It's,
wasn't really a pretty time. My fashion wasn't too great, even though it was great.
Your fashion, Nicole Shiro, has always been impeccable.
I don't think, but thank you, Lisa.
It's absolutely true. Oh my God, we're running out of time. So one thing, Pal Joey is coming back to Broadway.
I know, and I don't know how I feel about that. Why do you touch something Stockard Channing was in?
I did not know Stockard Channing was in it. But this is the fourth comeback, and they're setting it in the black community, the south side of Chicago in the 1940s. This is a Rodgers and Hart musical about a caddish nightclub performer. And this is one, and this is something we were talking about maybe 2 weeks ago. The hero is actually an anti-hero. You don't like this person. You don't like this.
I kind of love those and hate those, because it makes you question yourself as a human, even though, like, I don't know. I like that. I like being challenged.
I love him. And it's dual directed by Savion Glover, who we love, and Tony Goldwyn, who I had to... What?
I was like, love, Savion Glover.
And Tony Goldwyn, who I had to look up. He was in Scandal. He was President whoever.
Yes, I know. He's also the bad guy that kills Sam in Ghost. He kills Patrick Swayze in Ghost.
There you go. So I said it's had three Broadway revivals. The original starred Gene Kelly and Vivian Siegel. And this one has new songs. So again, it's Rodgers and Hart, and they're taking other songs from the Rodgers and Hart songbook.
Where are they getting these extra songs from?
From Rodgers and Hart songbook. They're gonna The Lady is a Tramp. It Never Entered My Mind are two of them. So it's gonna be, and they're changing the book a little bit. Obviously.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the last thing I need to talk about before we go to break the Broadway League is holding the vaccine requirements through 2021 to the first of 2022 at this point. It was originally till July. And so far, everything has been good on Broadway, with the exception of Aladdin.
Oh yeah, and Aladdin's no bueno.
No bueno. They canceled 10 days of performances.
Yeah, it wasn't just a little; it was a whole.
It was a lot, but only them. So that's interesting. An interesting thing is somebody was positive. They canceled one performance, and then they came back and started performances again, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of surprised by that. I was like, interesting. But yeah, they're the only ones.
All right. Well, let's take a little break, and we'll come back and listen to our first interview. But let's listen to Den of Iniquity from Pal Joey. And this is our very good friends, Patti LuPone, And oh my God, I forgot who's singing with her, but you'll recognize his voice. Here they are.
Okay. Just two little lovebirds all alone in a little corner.
Hi, I'm Lucy Arnaz, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
That was the incomparable Lucy Arnaz, who is a past guest on this show. One of our better interviews. We had a lot of fun. Maybe we will reprise that someday so that you, those of you, can hear it. And she was here as a guest of Austin Cabaret Theater by original co-host Stuart Moulton. Austin Cabaret Theater was just here, and we didn't talk about them because they were had no tickets left over, but we'll talk about them when they come back. They have a whole season, and maybe we'll get Stuart to come back and talk about what's going on with Austin Cabaret. So I got an email a little while ago from Susan Johnston Taylor, who has started an open mic night of show tunes, very similar to Curtain Call and Austin Cabaret Theater's monthly cabaret night. And so she did that. She started it right before the pandemic, and of course, pandemic put the brakes on, but it is back. And I spoke to her, I think, yesterday, maybe the day before, but let's listen to that interview, shall we? Here it is. Hey, everybody. I'm sitting here in the Zoom room on Monday night, and I am so fortunate enough to have Susan Johnston Taylor with me here. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And the incomparable Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shadles. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us tonight.
Welcome back. Well, we're here to talk about Open Call. And I didn't even know about this until a short while ago. And, you know, this is something that that I love, because this is we've had various versions of this in the past. Susan, tell folks what Open Call is.
So Open Call is a project that I started in February of 2020. Impeccable timing. I had one show tune open mic night at Kickbuck Cafe back in February. And then we went on pause, as so many theater companies did during the pandemic. And we've since picked up this summer. We've started doing outdoor show tune open mics at Cherrywood Coffee House, and we're about to have our third one out on the patio at Cherrywood.
Wonderful.
With Dr. Ellie playing piano.
Yay. Well, and she can play like a banshee.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't know that banshees actually invented the piano. Well, so tell us how's yours work. So can I just show up October, whatever, and sing, or do I need to sign up? What's this deal?
You have both options.
Uh-huh.
So for people that want the assurance of knowing that they will get a time slot, there are signups available in advance. So you can sign up. Typically, every time we've done this, there's always been time at the end for people to just jump up and sing. So we encourage both. Sometimes people show up to support a friend, and then they decide that they want to jump up and sing something from Thoroughly Modern Millie or Avenue Q or what have you. So
just those two shows?
Encouraged.
Can you sing from a different show?
You absolutely can, Lisa, but okay. If you don't bring your own sheet music, you will be limited to the sheet music that I have brought.
I see, which is Thoroughly Modern Millie and Avenue Q.
Well, yeah, and a few others, but I do, for Ellie's sake, I leave the Jason Robert Brown scores at home.
Oh, no, you should bring them. Ellie can handle them.
Well, give me some of that.
But so, can the singer.
So, Ellie, have you been part of this open call since it started, or
this will be my second time on the 20th, mm-hmm. which is exciting. But Susan reached out to me a little while back and asked me if I'd be willing to come play, and that it was outside and that it was Cherrywood and the vibe was really cool, and so I went and tried it and had a blast. Just
awesome.
Had a lot of fun. Yeah.
So is it mostly show tunes? Does anybody ever like come in with I'd like to play little Def Leppard?
We have not had Def Leppard, but last time we did have someone sing an opera aria. Ooh. And Ellie and the singer crushed it. They were great. Well,
I don't know if you know, but Ellie's education is in operatic voice.
Yes.
Just by chance.
Just by chance. Was the song Too Low Psy? Because that's the song I know.
No,
she was a pretty legit opera singer. I don't remember what she's... Do you remember what she sang, Ellie?
Yeah, she sang Voi Che Sapete from Marriage of Figaro.
Thank you. I know it.
Yeah, right?
I know. Oy vey from the third Marriage of Figaro. That's a whole different thing. So, Susan, what led you to come up with, decide to do an open mic night for show tune folky people?
Sure. Well, I was, before I moved to Austin, I was living in Victoria, British Columbia, and I was... I was involved with a group called Gotta Get a Gimmick that they did these really fun events periodically. The first act was an homage to a composer. Like we did Charles Strauss, we did Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Fulherty, we did Rodgers and Hammerstein. So the first act was rehearsed and auditioned and very polished. And the second act was a show tune open mic night. And I thought that that was so fun and it's such a great opportunity for people to come together in community and for people to, if they haven't sung in a while, to dust off their rep book, or if they're trying out new rep, to try it out for a supportive audience. So I just thought that because Austin didn't currently have something like that, I thought it was a good opportunity to fill that void.
Oh, it's awesome. So our listeners might remember Curtain Call, which was Kathy Sheridan and forgot his name, but he used to work at the Chronicle.
David Blackburn. Yeah.
David Blackburn played, but the other guy. Anyway, I forgot his name. Sorry, call me. And then prior to that, Austin Cabaret Theater did a monthly rehearsed evening of songs. So I think it's something that Austin needs and wants. Followers of Ground Floor Theater, the theater that I run, know that I have a desire to open up a piano bar above our lobby, because it's something else we don't have. So, Susan, what were you doing in British Columbia? Why did you come to Austin? Were you doing theater in British Columbia?
So I'm originally from Boston.
I call it Baston.
Yes. Yes,
Baston.
I'm originally from Boston, and I lived in Canada for 2.5 years with my husband's job, and I was doing some theater there. A lot of those projects, like Gotta Get a Gimmick, had some culture grants from the Canadian government, which is lovely.
They do that over there.
I know.
The Canadians value the arts.
Oh. Yes, they do, among other wonderful values, too.
True.
Yeah,
like Mounties.
So we relocated to Austin, also for his job, I think a little over 5 years ago. So I've done some shows here, and I just thought that since we didn't have anything at the time, I thought this would be a fun project to bring people together in community, even when they're not doing shows. And Lisa, I totally think that you should open a piano bar at Ground Floor, and I will definitely come.
I need financial backing. So if you could handle that for me, that I'd be doing. I've got the perfect spot for it. It's all in my head. I know how to do it.
I love it.
So Ellie, tell me what, so I'm always enthralled and amazed by people who can sight read. I've seen you play auditions and we do this. And it's a very specific talent that not everybody has. Even the most accomplished pianist doesn't necessarily have the chops to do what you do. So what is it that challenges you in these situations? Is this why we don't have Jason Robert Brown? Because you're afraid to do Jason Robert Brown? Or should we just throw a whole bunch of Sondheim at you? What challenges you as a pianist?
Oh, I would say that Sondheim definitely challenges me, and some good old Jason Robert Brown is always in the mix to challenge me. I think all of it's challenging because you never know what the singer's going to want to do. And so it just keeps me on my toes, and it's kind of a thrill ride. It's sort of an adrenaline rush a little bit.
Yeah. And there's a real talent to it. So my years in New York as a stage manager, I was in a lot of auditions, and you see a lot of pianists that come in and you can immediately tell, you know, the good ones from the less good ones. well, because it's a true talent. And Ellie, you're like right up there with the greats.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So this coming up October, hold on, give me the date because it's here on my computer, but I can't read.
Wednesday, October 20th.
October 20th. This October 20th, which is 1 week from the moment that this interview airs, or 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I think, from the moment this interview airs. Anyway. How many have you done up until now? How many of these have you had from beginning of COVID till now?
This will be number 4, and this will be Ellie's second time playing.
So was there a highlight to the previous ones? Is there something you can share with our audience that might show how fun this is?
Well, Jim Lindsay was a highlight, I would say, of last time. He closed us out with, was it From Next to Normal or was it Fun Home that he sang, Ellie?
Oh, it was Next to Normal. He closed us out with that. Yeah.
I have seen him sing From Next to Normal. and let's just say that I don't want to perform. Do I still want to come and watch?
Yes.
You absolutely do.
What's in it for me if I'm not going to perform?
Well, there might be a special four-legged guest coming to the next open call. It is outdoors and the patio is dog friendly. So there might be a chihuahua to steal the show.
I was thinking it might be a horse, but a chihuahua's good too. no, it's always fun. You know, it's fun to go. And as I mentioned, there's no real place set up on an ongoing basis for folks to come and enjoy this kind of entertainment. And indeed it is. And you can see lots of different things. Does anybody ever come in and do any kind of delights? Do they say, hey, get off of that piano, Dr. Ellie Jerry Chattels. I'm going to play for myself.
Well, they could. Yeah.
We haven't had that so far. We've had a few people sing a cappella, but they haven't kicked out Ellie yet.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, again, you said it's at Cherrywood on the 20th. What time?
7 to 9 p.m.
And if someone wants to apply or put their name in the hat in advance, how would they do that?
If you are so inclined to do that, one could theoretically go to the Facebook page, which is Open Call ATX, and there's a sign up genius link. So you don't have to put your name in the hat. You can just sign up and then you'll have a guaranteed spot. Or you can just show up, bring your sheet music, or rely on whatever sheet music I have chosen to bring. And you can do a jump.
Which we already know is Thoroughly, Modern Millie, and Avenue Q.
There might be some Fiddler and some Wicked in there too.
Mama loves Fiddler. That's the first Broadway show I ever saw. Well, awesome. And you taught me a new term that I have not heard before. What was the name of that link? Genius link?
Oh, sign up genius.
I don't. Okay. So it's in there somewhere, right?
Yes.
Okay. What if I'm not tech savvy? Let's say I'm an old person and I want to come do it. Is there any other way to contact you? Or do I just show up with my sheet music that I've etched in granite?
You could show up with your sheet music. That's certainly an option. Or sometimes people message me through the Facebook page and I can sign them up for them so that there's like a placeholder slot for them.
Right. So this is anything. And there's really no boundaries of what someone can do.
I ask that people keep their song to within 5 minutes. So like probably not a mega medley.
So we're not going to be doing Inagata DeVita, which is an entire side of an album.
Right. Okay. Right.
Well, awesome. And so more information at the Facebook page. And this is in the Facebook page. It says I forgot the wording, but it's not all the time. Is it going to be every month, every 2 weeks? How are you going to be doing these in the future?
The phrase that I've used is semi-regular.
That's the phrase I was trying to remember.
Yes. I would love to make it a monthly event. I think Ellie and I, and also as we navigate these uncertain times, I think we're all mm-hmm. trying to figure out, and also with the venue. And this time I've hired a sound person. So that's another, that's another variable.
Good thing to do.
Oh, yes. Yay.
Yes. So, you know, in the future, if we can all, the venue and Ellie and I and the sound person can all figure out a time when we can do this monthly, that would be great. Otherwise, it'll be semi-regularly for the time being, you know, based on pending venue and pianist and sound person availability.
And is there any kind of COVID mitigation that people should expect there at Cherrywood?
So we will be outdoors. If you go inside to use the restroom or order food, which I encourage you to order as well.
Okay, so it's a face mask free outside if you're distanced, and then if you go inside, you will be wearing a face mask.
I'll probably be wearing a mask when I'm seated, and I'm sure other people will be too.
Wonderful. Great. Well, Dr. Ellie Jarrett Shadles and Susan Johnston Taylor, I am so happy that you joined us on Offstage and On the Air. And I'm going to definitely try to make it because I have a really good time at those things.
Yes, yay. Lisa. Yes, you should sing.
Yeah, that won't happen. But I will eat a cheeseburger at Cherrywood.
Excellent.
Yeah, yummy.
That's great.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Picture me, just another cool kid.
And we are back. You are still listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa. And who else?
Nicole.
Yay, that was my way of finding out if you were on the phone. And you are, yay.
I figured as much.
So the song we heard at the end of that interview was 13, which is from the show 13 from Jason Robert Brown, because they kept talking about how difficult he was. So I thought that song didn't sound too difficult.
No, but you know,
Jason Robert Brown is tough.
He is tough.
So
tough cookie.
Yeah, he is a tough cookie. Great. So we've got time to talk about some more stuff. Jagged Little Pill just keeps getting in more and more trouble.
I was just like, you need to stop. They need to stop. Like, it's like every time they open their mouth, it's just not good.
So one of their cast members, Nora Schell, who identifies as non-binary, posted a public account of alleged mistreatment. They claimed that Jagged Little Pill stage manager and other members of management repeatedly dismissed their need for medical treatment related to a diagnostic of polycystic ovarian syndrome. And
not cool.
No, not cool. And it just, it really upsets me that the stage manager is part of this, because the stage manager is supposed to be, in many ways, an advocate for the cast, even though they straddle
the
line.
Yeah, like the protector. Yeah.
Yeah, although they do straddle the line between management and cast. It's a really tough line to straddle. But mm-hmm. that also tells me that Equity was aware of it. And mm-hmm. Equity has been saying, you know, has been very vocal about trying to be. So this just doesn't sound good on any way, shape, or form. And this production of Jagged Little Pill, I don't know. This just, it has been problematic from the get-go.
Fraught with issues from the start. And they just, like, I don't know. It's like a new door to open every day.
Well, not really from the, I mean, if fraught with issues from its entree or from its exit from ART and its entry into Broadway. It seems like it was a different show back at ART.
Yes. That's, so, I guess, a better way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, it's sad because you don't, you know, this is the community of theater in New York, and the community that represents that theater for really the whole country in the world.
It's sad. It's saddening.
Yeah, so Equity has hired an attorney to investigate it. I don't really know what that means, whether they're investigating.
Me neither.
Yeah. And I guess I'm so, my mind has been co-opted. I've been watching the Monica Lewinsky television series.
Oh, yes.
So my mind is all about... corruption and people saying one thing and doing another. So,
yeah.
Yep.
You are jaded at the moment in your thought process of what to think. I get it.
Yeah. So, are you a Killing Eve fan?
Not really. Like, no. But I'm not like, oh, no, not that. So.
Well, that's good. Well, Jodie Comer is the co-star along with Sandra Oh. And Jodie Comer.
I love me some Sandra Oh.
And I love me some Jodie Comer. I think she, when I, you know, I didn't know who she was before Killing Eve, but she's just got such a wonderful energy. She is making her UK stage debut in a show called Prima Facie, written by Susie Miller. And she's playing a character named Tessa, and it is a one-person play about a young...
Oh, wow. I mean, like, so let's just do it all when we go in for our first time. Whoa.
That's true. Exactly. Why not do a...
That's a
one-person
lot.
Play. Yeah, but I think, I mean, based on what I've seen her on Killing Eve, I think...
Oh,
she can
I know she can, but I'm just like, you know,
and she
why
does,
not do it all?
Yeah, and she does have some... she does have... theatrical bona fides, but I think this is her first UK experience. So anyway, the character is a young, brilliant barrister who loves to win and has worked her way up from working class origins to the top of her game, prosecuting, cross-examining, and lighting up the shadows of doubt in any case.
So, interesting.
Yeah. How do you feel in general about one-person shows?
So, you know, I always want to be like, I don't like them, but then, you know, some of the best experiences I've ever seen on stage theatrically have been like Holland and Anne or Lynn Redgrave and Shakespeare for My Father or Barbara Jordan and the Woman, Barbara, oh gosh, not Jordan, Barbara, the Woman of Independence Means, oh my gosh, what actress, Barbara, it's going to come to me.
Barbara Jordan, but, you I know, like Barbara Jordan.
I wish it was Barbara Jordan, but so I've had some experiences unlike no other theatrically with a one-person show.
I actually, you know, I'm not a big fan of one-person shows, but I do appreciate, and I'm with you on Anne. I loved Anne. The good thing about Anne is there is one other person in it. I think one of the things that gets me about one-person shows, and I think the first one I saw was Bully, done by James Whitmore on Broadway. And, after hearing the same voice for 2 hours, it just kind of lulls me to sleep, no matter how good they are.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But
I could see that.
But I do love Anne. And then, you know, we just had at Ground Floor Theater, Evan McQuaid, local hero, doing a one-person show called Lady Macbeth and Her Pal Megan, which was really fun and easy to watch. And again, I think maybe, I don't remember the running time of Anne. Was there an intermission in Anne? Is it two acts?
There are two acts.
Okay. One-person shows for me seem to go better in the 80 to 90 minute range.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. And just, you know, I always need to be like, oh no. And then most of the time I leave totally delighted and in awe that you're just like, whoa, that was one person.
Yeah, I don't leave necessarily totally delighted, but I'm usually in awe. If they're good, there's nothing worse than a bad one-person show.
Oh, a bad one-person show. I mean, you really just can't escape it, can you?
No. Now, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about one of your heroes, Miss Kush Gumbo.
Jumbo. But I like Kush Gumbo.
It's, I think, isn't it spelled Gumbo?
No, Jumbo, oh, J-U-M-B-O.
Oh, but you know, I wrote it with a G in my paper. So tell us about her production of Hamlet.
Oh, wow. So at the Old Vic in England, she is doing Hamlet and playing Hamlet, and she is just so fascinating. The photos and video I have seen her, she just tells so much through her eyes with not much. And she is getting rave reviews. Lisa, I just want to go across the pond and see that and Back to the Future and Chanel and Tina Turner and turn around and come home.
There you go.
Just wish I could have the time and the money and the, you know.
Yep. Well, she has indeed gotten really good notices. Now, she's no stranger to the theater. She's done productions of As You Like It and A Doll's House, amongst other things.
She was in The River with Jess Butterworth's The River with one Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I know.
That's where I discovered her and went, who is this woman?
So,
she is spectacular.
It was initially announced back in 2019 as their... as the Young Vic's 2020 autumn show. And of course, that didn't happen.
No. So I'm glad she got to go back on there. She's apparently, and I think I may have mentioned this before, maybe I haven't, but she's apparently written a whole musical on Josephine Baker and has played it and is supposed to be spectacular.
Oh,
and I really would like to see her do that. Wow.
Interesting. Yeah,
an interesting person.
Looks good.
Didn't you like her on The Good Wife and The Good Life?
Of course. Although she's no longer on The Good Fight, she's not there anymore.
Oh, The Good Fight. That's it. She left, so she could do Hamlet.
There you go.
Play Hamlet.
So here is a sad thing about an organization that I wasn't aware of, and I don't know why I wasn't aware of it, but it is a playwrights incubator called The Lark. After 25 years, it is closing its doors for financial reasons. Like within COVID, the founder and longtime executive director announced his retirement, and then they just could not financially make it, and they are closing their doors.
That is such a bummer.
The woman at the helm was a woman named May Aldrales. And the executive director is Stacey Waring. And evidently, the behind the scenes, it wasn't going very good. Their landlord, and this is just this is the thing that kills me. This was, I believe, during COVID, threatened to double their rent.
Okay. Why?
Well, who knows?
Well, I mean, why? You know what I mean? I know why, but why?
No, I'm with you. So, interestingly enough, of the five most recent winners of the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, four were Lark playwrights. And some of those playwrights are Katori Hall.
So disheartening.
Katori Hall, Rajiv Joseph, Dominique Morisseau, Jen Silverman, Lucas Nath, Mike Liu, Dipka Kunda, Samuel D. Hunter, Raina Mirza, Sam Chase, and there's just a whole list of
amazing
playwrights. So
disheartening.
It was founded in 1994. It provided writers with funding, space, collaborators, audiences, and professional connections, and then just the freedom to design at their own pace. It sounds like an amazing group. There's a link to the American Theater Magazine article about it. It just seems really, really sad.
It is sad. And, you know, I hope there are other theatrical organizations in New York and across the region that think out of the box and talk to some of these people and get them on their team doing things like this in other places. 'Cause, like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did, they are working with other organizations so that their current list of fellows are not going to be left out in the cold, which I think is also very, very good.
Yeah. It's just
okay.
Bummer.
We only have
we
only have a few more minutes, so I'm going to skip stuff. We'll talk about this next week, but let's talk about Austin Playfest that we're going to have as guests on our show. But I thought maybe you might want to let folks know what Austin Playhouse is doing with this. And then we'll do a very quick Today in Theater History.
Okay. This is Austin Playfest is going to, you're part of it, Lisa, with the Ground Floor Theater. But Austin Playfest has put together a whole bunch of different theaters doing a virtual platform of plays. There'll be Q&As, some live streams, one in-person event. You are part of it. Ground Floor Theater, Tilt Theater Company, Manifest Theater Company, Deaf Austin Theater, Hyde Park Theater, The Vortex, Austin Playhouse. I feel like I'm missing one.
Well, it's okay. We don't have a whole bunch of time to do it. There is a link on the website, offstageonair.com, and they're going to be guests on the show. And we'll be able to talk to them directly.
And there's more information on the who's, what, where, when at austinplayfest.com.
There you go. And finally, very quickly, today in theater history, we're going to go We're going to go back to 1919, and I'm only talking about this because I love the name of this show. It's called Hitchikoo 1919.
Yeah, what? Hello. I feel like they wrote this about us.
I don't know. It seems like it's a variety kind of show, but there is a 28-year-old composer by the name of Cole Porter who wrote his first hit song, Old Fashioned Garden, from that show.
Okay, that just warmed my heart.
Yep. In 1974, Bernadette Peters and Robert Preston did Mac and Mabel by Jerry Herman. David Merrick produced it. Gower Champion staged it. Michael Stewart wrote the book. In 1977, Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, directed by Mike Nichols, was The Gin Game at the John Golden Theater.
I was one of those people there.
It's been revived several times. I was there. That was when I first moved to New York.
Did you see it?
No. It was revived in 97 with Charles Durning and Julie Harris, and in 2015 with Cicely Tyson, our favorite, and James Earl Jones.
Can you imagine that one, too? Wow.
2010, The Great Gatsby opens at the Public Theater. And they did the entire novel word for word over 6.5 hours.
Wow. How long was that? Wow.
6.5 hours.
Whoa.
And finally, oh no, not finally, because I'm going to say one more thing. 2013, Andrew Lippa and John August's musical Big Fish opened, directed and choreographed.
Gosh, that was that long ago.
I know.
Wow.
Seems like yesterday.
Yes.
And then in 2016, Holiday Inn, the Irving Berlin musical, opened.
And see, that seems like that was long, more long, like that the year should have been switched between Big Fish and...
I agree.
Wow.
Oh my God, we have gone over time. We have got to stop.
All right.
That's it for Offstage and On the Air. Stand by for Texas Music Mixtape with DJ Max, standing in for Mark Fort. We're going to be back next week when we look what's happening offstage and on the air, and we're going to play a little something from a thing we didn't talk about. Tick, tick, boom. Here it is. See you next week.
Bye.
Why do we play with fire?
Oh my God, we totally went over.
Why?
You there?
Do we